You're listening to audio from the West End Community Church in McGregor, Manitoba.
The gunpowder, the treason, and the plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. It goes on from there, but those are some of the more recognizable lines. How many people learned that poem in school? Not a single one of you. There's no reason why you would have, actually. There's no surprise there. I was actually, if somebody raised a hand, I was going to call them a liar. So, the words, the poem is titled The 5th of November, and the words are actually from this poem, and it describes the intervention that foiled the plot that was instituted by a guy by the name of Guy Fawkes in 1605 in England. I don't know if you've ever heard that name. Maybe you have. Guy Fawkes was this, he was a Roman Catholic, and he was really upset at the Protestant-led British government. And so he and a number of his friends, they came up with this plan. I don't know what kind of bomb that they were setting up in 1605, but they were going to blow up the British Parliament, the Protestant-controlled Houses of Parliament in 1605. This was a long time ago, right? This is multiple centuries ago. And even though it happened so long ago, school kids in Britain are still required to recite this poem or to memorize it. Remember, remember, the 5th of November, the gunpowder, the treason, and the plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgotten. And then it goes on from there. It's a fairly long poem. And school kids in Britain are apparently supposed to, I don't know if they still do it, but what I read is that they are supposed to recognize, they are supposed to memorize this poem. And the reason why they are supposed to memorize and recognize this poem is the description was, and I'm sure we've heard this phrase before, those who ignore history are almost inevitably doomed to repeat it. Essentially, oh, I forgot to put my glasses behind my tie. There we go. I think, if I can maybe just theorize a little bit, is that people, kids are required, or people in Britain were encouraged to remember and memorize this poem or memorize this significant event because they didn't want this to happen again, right? We don't want these kind of plans. I mean, ultimately, in the end, it didn't happen, and everybody was saved, and there was, but the plan was in place. And the people that foiled Guy Fawkes's plan wanted the country, the nation of Britain, to remember so that nothing like this would ever have the chance to happen again. And that's significant. And it's really what we're talking about today, because for most of us, it's easier to forget than it is to remember, right? I mean, for so many times throughout the Bible, the people are called to remember things. They're called to remember events. They're actually called to put certain things in place in order to help them with that recollection. And the events that are described here in Esther chapter 9 underscore the importance that is attached to remembering. And what Pastor Matt talked about last week, and he used the phrase divine reversal, and just how things were inevitably heading in this one direction. And then when, even though he's not mentioned, when God intervened and changed the entire course of the Jews' history in Persia, he changed them from going this direction into going this direction. And Matt, Pastor Matt, referred to it as the divine reversal. I've read in a few different commentaries, some people would call it the great deliverance or what, however you want to call it. But the end of the book of Esther gets down to this. Haman is foiled, and we get to this point where this plot is still going forward, even though Haman's not around. It's a law of the Medes and Persians. It's been set into place, but then there's a new law written to, I don't know if counteract, but or to go alongside the first law that was encouraging genocide. There was another law that said that the Jews could fight back, and they did fight back, and lives were saved. The preservation of the people of God, the Jewish people in Persia were saved. So there's this divine reversal. There's this great deliverance. And I don't know if you noticed chapter 9 and verse 28 when Pastor Matt was reading it, but I'm just going to read it again for you. It says that these days should be what? Should be remembered, right? These days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, in every clan, in every province and city, and that these days of Purim should never fall into disuse among the Jews, nor should the commemoration of these days cease among their descendants. So my question to us this morning, and that what we're going to seek to answer is, what were they remembering? What were they remembering? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. That's what the author says, that these days should be remembered. Well, what are the days that they are remembering? Verses 24 and 25 actually give us a really helpful little summary. Verse 24 says, for Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammedathah, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast pur, significant word right there, that is cast lots, to crush and to destroy them. But when it came before the king, he gave orders in writing that his evil plan that he had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. Therefore, they called these days Purim, after the term pure. Therefore, because of all that was written in this letter and of what they had faced in this matter and of what had happened to them, the Jews firmly obligated themselves and their offspring to all who join them. I'll just stop there for a sec. Excuse me. So in those verses, 24, 25, and then in verse 26, we get this explanation. And we've used this term, Pastor Matt read it a bunch of times. I've mentioned it a number of times. We've used this word Purim, and this is, everything that we're going to talk about today is centered around this word, Purim. I don't know if you've ever heard that word before, or you read it and you go, what does that mean? And then you just kind of went on or whatever it is. But we know from the Bible, from Esther chapter 9, that pur, P-U-R, is the Persian word for lot. And in its plural form, it's Purim, okay? Let's stop there for a sec. I don't know if you remember back, if you go all the way back to chapter 1, or maybe it's chapter 2, I can't remember, but in there somewhere, when Haman is devising his maniacal plan to get rid of all the Jews in Persia, what does he do? He casts lots, right? And it's described in the original language as pure, P-U-R, and Purim. And so there is this idea there that, you know, Haman is basically gambling with the Jews' lives, and he's trying to come up with a day that's going to work in his busy schedule to commit genocide and all that sort of stuff. Now in chapter 9, when we've had this great deliverance, when we've had the divine reversal, what is instituted here by way of Mordecai and by way of some of the Jews in the high places is a commemorative festival or feast that, again, underscores the fact that